Stanford put the word out before the Ivy Leagues did. Sports are canceled. I mean, sort of, maybe, right? We'll get into that. Larry Scott may be on the way out. He's getting the squeeze. We got an Axios graph that is so disgusting. Sports Pac-12 puts out a tweet about recruits and the Pac-12. And we have shamed a reviewer into deleting his review. Football in the spring for the Pac-12? Maybe so. Is the NCAA on the no plan plan? Just a suggestion plan. He's Ralph Amsden. I'm George Reister. And this is the Pac-12 Apostles. Thank you for listening to the Pac-12 Apostles. This is the podcast for you. If you are a college football, college basketball fan, and you love the Pac-12, this is the place for you. Make sure that you share the podcast with a friend, tell a friend about it, and leave a five-star rating, not a four-star rating. We'll get into that. And if you want to get a hold of us, he's at Ralph Amsden on Twitter. I'm at George Reister. The podcast is at Pac-12 Apostles, or you can send us an email. I'm mad. At unafraidshow.com, or you can leave a voicemail in the Anchor app. That is also an option. Yeah, we thank you for your time. Now it's time to get to the show. Ralph, the Larry Scott has held Olympic sports so dear, so close to his heart. And mind you, I'm an Olympic sport lover. But at the same time, I realized that the money, the cash cow is football. And before the Ivy Leagues made their announcement saying that fall sports were going to be not postponed, but canceled, any sports before January were going to be canceled. So what that means is that they are going to reassess at some point in time what is going to happen. And Stanford actually got ahead of them by canceling 20 some odd sports. What do you make of that, Ralph Amsden?
Well, Stanford, it's good to talk to you, by the way, George.
I know I missed you, bro.
Yeah, I'm out here on the road. I am currently sitting in the third story of a cabin that overlooks Palisades Lake on the eastern border of Idaho, western border of Wyoming. And there's nobody around for miles in every direction. And I'm pretending like I'm just here for a regular vacation and not to be out of Arizona, where them not taking everything seriously has resulted in the apocalypse in my home state. So, but it is good to talk to you. This Stanford thing, you know, they said that they were facing a $70 million shortfall over the next 3 years. And so what they decided to do was to completely cut 11 of the 36 sports that are sponsored by the school there. And that includes men's and women's fencing, field hockey, men's rowing, women's sailing, squash, synchronized swimming, men's volleyball, and wrestling, all gone from Stanford's offering of sports at the school. And you know, Larry Scott likes to talk about how the Pac-12 is the conference of champions. Well, I mean, it's the conference of champions because a lot of the championships are won, and you know, some of these sports that are getting cut by, you know, what is considered to be the academic cornerstone of the entire conference. And so, you know, according to Stanford's release, they say, we now face the reality that significant change is needed to create fiscal stability for Stanford athletics and to provide the support we believe is essential for our student athletes to excel. So they're discontinuing 11 of their varsity sports programs at the conclusion of 2020-2021. And 20 support staff positions at Stanford are being completely eliminated. And there's 240 student athletes and 22 dedicated coaches. And they've got 4,000 alumni in just those sports. And so, you know, that 20 national championships, 27 Olympic medals, all from Stanford, from the sports that are being cut.
That is major. And it's easier to cut sports than it is to bring sports back. So while Stanford has no idea how long that this is going to last, the pandemic and the shortfalls and all of that, the question is, do they bring them back on the back end? Because, you know, Stanford, this is the Pac-12. They pride themselves on saying this is the conference of champions, but really it's the conference of champions of Olympic sports, because we haven't had football or basketball in quite some time. I don't think we've had basketball in 20 years. And yeah, it's been a long, long time. So it's a matter of, you know, so I think that puts an even bigger impetus on fixing football and making sure that football is your frontline issue. Is your frontline sport, and that you are nurturing that.
Hey, so I've got a little bit of a controversial topic that is an offshoot of this, and we're never afraid to get into the weeds on this show. But when I was naming off some of the sports that got canceled, you know, in deep in the recesses in the back of my mind, I'm like, man, these are a lot of the white sports, right? Like, your fencing, your rowing, the more affluent, the people who essentially have access to training from a young age, they're very niche sports. And when I was reading through Stanford's explanation of why they actually chose these 11 sports to be cut, one of the reasons that they listed that they cut these particular sports, and it's bullet points in it, I'm reading this word for word, is the impact on the diversity of our student athlete population. I'm assuming what they mean is that this isn't going to cut into the diversity of the student athlete population at Stanford. Is that kind of what you're getting from it?
Yeah, Ralph, I don't think that it can be, you know, understated that, yeah, this is a racial issue on some level, because if you are Stanford, especially in the climate today, even if all the Black Lives Matter, everything wasn't going on right now, and you had to make a choice to cut sports, what are some of the factors that you would pay attention to besides, you know, if they're all sports that lose money, what are some of the factors that you would factor in?
Well, I mean, I think a couple of the key ones that Stanford actually did factor into their decision would probably come into play for me. How many other colleges have the sport? And, you know, Stanford points out that less than 22% of the 350 Division I institutions have, you know, men's and women's fencing, rowing, women's sailing, synchronized swimming. You know, all of those are at less than a fifth of those colleges. And six of those sports, lightweight rowing, men's rowing, co-ed, and women's sailing, squash, and synchronized swimming, are not even NCAA sponsored championship sports at all. So
yeah, and they're like club sports essentially.
Yeah. And then there are only two other Division I field hockey and fencing programs on the West Coast. So they have to travel, kind of like how Arizona State has to travel to do most of their hockey. And most of which, the hockey program is being basically privately funded at Arizona State. And I don't think Stanford has, you know, that. They don't have people coming in who have the ability to privately sponsor to keep these sports in play. But the one of the ones that they pointed out that I think is probably just the easiest one to go with is local and national fan interest in the sport. They cut the 11 least popular, right? And they also said that national youth and postgraduate participation in the sport factored in as well. So if you don't have people going pro in these sports or going to the Olympics in these sports, they obviously have in the past, but if you don't have them right now at a rate worth keeping them around, and you see that youth participation is going down in all of them, then, you know, that's really what puts them on the chopping block. I just don't want that one, the one thing where it's obvious that they did outline that it's a factor that, hey, like there's not a ton of diversity in participation in these sports. And so that made the decision easier. I just don't want that to become one of the, you know, super, super conservative talking points out there. I don't want to see this on Tucker Carlson's show later this week of like, does Stanford hate white people? You know, there's obviously there's a bunch of factors, but when they threw that in there, it was like, oh, well, they're admitting it. Okay.
Yeah, it was in. See, that's the way you put out a statement. It is honest. It is transparent. There can be no misunderstanding, and it's a recognizing that you know what everybody is saying.
So you don't think Stanford hates white people?
No. No, no, okay. No. I think Stanford made a calculated move. I think that they, you know, like, okay, out of all, I mean, it was logical. It was exactly the way you expect Stanford to make a decision. All right. Okay. First thing is, which sports make money? Boom. Which sports do we compete in the Pac-12? Boom. Which sports are not NCAA, their championships aren't sanctioned. Oh, there's a bunch right there. Okay, cool. That's where we'll start the list, and then we'll back from there. So, yeah. So, you know, it's unfortunate that a lot of, you know, affluent kids are going to have, you know, to get into school a different route, you know, and that they'll have some of their, you know, their sports taken away, but hopefully they'll be able to add them back on the back end.
I will say that the one that does shock me on here is men's volleyball, because I feel like that's a fast growing sport.
I don't know about fast growing, but it is fun to watch. I mean, these dudes are hyper athletic. They're super tall. They look like, you know, like 9 Pau Gasols just jumping all over the place.
No, they are absolutely quite entertaining to watch. Freak athletes. Remember Chase Buttinger, the yep. University of Arizona. I mean, he was like a monster as a volleyball player. It translates really well from basketball to volleyball, and for some guys can just jump high, you know, and a lot of the other technical skill of basketball doesn't necessarily come around, and you get some of those athletes playing volleyball, and it's, I mean, it's wild to watch people flying around, and that's the one that surprised me, I think. But I will say, I think that the Ivy League canceling fall sports and Stanford cutting a bunch of sports, and I think that we are delivering a blow to the pandemic is a hoax that's all about the election crowd. And when I say we are delivering a blow, I mean, I like just by announcing these things that are actually happening in real life, because this virus isn't political. It's not about taking sides. People are losing lives, and institutions are losing sports, and people are losing their jobs. And it's all because of the spread of a virus. And we've known how viruses spread forever, right? You practice good hygiene and distancing and reduce droplets by wearing a mask if you can. And so many people have refused to participate in that because they believe it's political in some way. And I just want to say, I'm keeping track of all these people. I think you should remember everyone who has actively pushed back against taking this whole thing seriously when we lose fall sports across the whole country, because I know I will. And I don't think those people should ever be listened to again. And I'm not talking about the people who didn't participate or waited too long to get serious about it. I'm talking about the people from the very beginning who have kind of pushed the idea that we've overreacted, when the truth is our underreaction is what's costing us everything.
No, Ralph, they won't. That's not what they're going to say. They are going to say it is our overreaction, and that we have to put kids, you know, there's 67,000 pediatricians that said kids need to be back in school. But that also doesn't read the details that they're like, yeah, they need to be back in school if it's safe, if you can have protocols, all of that stuff. Like, they left off the details of what 67,000 pediatricians said. You know, this is such a political issue, and And at the end of the day, I think it comes down to what I was saying earlier, that this is about that, that at the end of the day, it's about risk and tolerance, that each school, their tolerance for having a kid test positive or die, it, well, not just test positive, but get very sick, because death isn't the only option. There's very sick. There are some potential long-lasting effects and all of that. So the long-lasting effects, very sick or potential death. Like the risk tolerance for the school has to be like zero. Like it's like we can't have anybody die and we can't have anybody get severely sick. And but if you look at all of college football, all 73,000 and 13,000 Division I players, if you looked at the end of the year and you said, okay, three players died or two players died and seven or 10 got extremely sick, would that be acceptable to you, Ralph?
Not if it was preventable. I mean, there's nothing that I can personally do from my couch to prevent somebody from lowering the crown of their helmet to the point where it does spinal damage to them that might cost them their ability to walk or potentially live, right? There's nothing I can do from my couch, not a single thing. But there are things that I can do to make sure that I am not complicit in the spread of a virus that doesn't need to be spread, that doesn't somehow work its way into a collegiate athletic program and adversely affect a student athlete or coaching staff member or administrative or support staff member or their extended families. So I actually have a way to try to make sure I'm doing my part. There's already risk in football of death or serious injury. That already exists. But those aren't necessarily things that I can control. If you're that passionate about it, I guess you could refuse to consume football in general if you think that your consumption is actually complicitness in, you know, the injuries that are caused on a football field. You know, with COVID, it's something that reaches across sports into civilian life, into every area of everything. And so if I know that a school didn't do everything that it possibly could have to keep the student athletes safe, and one of them was to contract this virus and either have lifelong issues or pass away from it, then that one athlete, that cost is too much. So, yep. I mean, I think as long as everybody is doing their part and living sensibly and understanding what needs to be done, there's a possibility that we could have an incredibly low risk sports season that probably doesn't involve fans at this time. That we could probably have it, but I don't think that we're ready to be that selfless as a society. I don't think that we're ready to contribute to that. And the schools can do everything they can, but they can't control what the kids do when they leave or how the kids' families are acting or, you know, just people on the street and everything like that. And we have shown very recently, especially with, you know, people just getting sick of people who never participated in trying to slow the spread in the first place, or people who just got sick of it in California, Arizona, and Texas, you know, have caused a massive resurgence in we're still in the initial wave of the pandemic. And because of that stuff that you've been saying for 3 months, George, that we were going to cost, that kind of stuff was going to cost us football. And I think that's what we're on the precipice of, is we're not even going to get to find out how many deaths is worth having football, because we're not going to have football.
I think it has a lot to do, like I said, with what's going on in Major League Baseball. So in Major League Baseball, you have had teams, like multiple teams. We're talking about the Angels had to delay their workouts on Monday because people who were scheduled to administer the second round of tests never arrived at the facility. The A's, Astros, Cardinals, Nationals, Cubs, and Giants all either canceled workouts. Some of them had to self-administer tests. They haven't gotten their results. So, like, So if this is Major League Baseball, which actually has protocols in place, how does that even work in college football when the NCAA has said, oh, well, we'll put in our own, well, we will make suggestions. We won't put across a standalone protocol for everybody. You make your own. You decide what you think is best. I think the lack of leadership and lack of actual putting forth an actual plan is what, and the initial reaction to the pandemic is what is actually costing sports at this point in time.
Yeah. I'm less interested in finding out what the culprit is and more interested in just like, can we fix it from here? And Mark Emmert has not been a loud voice on any of this. And I've been trying to pay attention. Larry Scott.
Where's all that interest that you spent lobbying against players? Where's all of that?
Yeah, I honestly feel like I've heard more directly from the NCAA on a 2-year-old basketball scandal in the last couple of months than I have strict direction on what we're supposed to be expecting. And then when you knock that down to the conference level, I don't mean to like alienate our listeners by saying this, but I don't particularly feel that Larry Scott has done a bad job when it comes to sharing what he knows when he knows it. And it feels like he's really ratcheted up in the last couple of weeks his rhetoric about the fact that our individual behaviors are potentially going to cost us fall sports. So I've appreciated that about him. Now, regardless of that, there's a million other problems that continue to be extremely persistent with his leadership in the conference. But as far as just this specific thing, he hasn't come out and said anything that he didn't need to say. He said that he keeps in communication with everybody, and he's been open about the fact that every day that goes by, the chance increases that we're not going to have a Pac-12 slate of games in the fall. And I feel like the fact that he's even floating those things mean that we're closer to that than many people probably willing to admit.
See, they always prep you for it, though. They prep you for it. They put out little feelers that way you kind of started planting that seed. Oh, wow, this may not happen. They knew what the answer to this test was 2 weeks ago because they already said that it was going to take 6 weeks, that they would give teams 6 weeks to ramp up and work out and all that stuff to get back in shape. But you've already had teams stop their workouts because they had too many positives or didn't get results or whatever. So they stopped workouts. So where's your 6 weeks? Because the college football season is supposed to start, what, August 25th, August 26th?
And what's interesting is I've actually seen a few football players that have publicly questioned what the plan is for them, you know, whether or not they feel comfortable being on campus in general. Malik Hausman, who is, I think he's a defensive back at University of Arizona out of the state of California. He started tweeting a little while back, like, hey, why are we even here? He said, in response to a tweet that said the University of Arizona's president said today the campus wouldn't reopen under current COVID-19 conditions with cases and hospitalizations on the rise. Quote, we're truly an exponential growth in the number of cases here, he said. That's University of Arizona's president. And Malik Hausman quoted this, quote tweeted it back on June 30th, and he said, so why are me and my team on campus then? And then he retweeted somebody replying, because money relative to football is more important than health. So, and then another football player from University of Arizona, outside linebacker Kylan Wilborn, said, college athletes need to speak up now more than ever. If you feel you're being put at unnecessary risk by your institution, it's your job to speak up on it. It's your health. Isaiah Johnson, another University of Arizona linebacker, said the NCAA and universities want us to play during a global pandemic so they won't lose millions of dollars, but can't slash won't give us money. I'm not asking for $50K, but you can't break us off three bands.
Dude, that's a fact.
So like, it's just interesting. All I'm watching all these University of Arizona players speak up about the fact that, like, if the universities honestly believe that students shouldn't be on campus, then are they not owed an explanation for why they are on campus? And I mean, I feel like there's a legitimate answer to that, in the same way that they're talking about bringing school back, having maybe high schoolers do online and actually using the high school to help house some junior high and elementary school kids so you can socially distance across multiple school buildings. Like, the idea that student athletes are on campus and other athletes aren't, I actually feel like adds a layer of protection to those student athletes who are sort of being quarantined on campus. Now, should they have the ability to opt out of something like that and maybe preserve their eligibility given the crazy time in history that we're living in? Maybe. But I do think they deserve to at least have those questions answered by their individual schools. I personally feel like there is an answer, and I feel like the student athletes are probably safer on campus than they would be just out and about doing their own thing, especially if other students aren't going to be on campus right now. But at the same time, it's interesting to see some of these players speaking out.
Yeah, I would say that it is very, very important that you have, let me go back for a second to your point about it making players safer. Yes, having players on campus without having students on campus can potentially make them safer because they're not around the rest of the student body and all of that, but they are out in the community and all that. My problem with it is, which is what the student athlete said that you just referenced, this whole thing has been perpetuated about student first. You are a student first. So if you are a student first, how in the hell can you say that it's not safe enough for the students to be on campus, but some kids who aren't being paid, we want you on campus to make money for everybody else? I just think that that is a weird proposition, especially when you have some of these kids who are higher risk and some people who are high risk that don't know they're high risk yet. I mean, there's a lot of people that have illnesses come on, diabetes, anything that they didn't know that they had. And then it pops up. I mean, it's like, I know I sound like the doom and gloom guy, and that's not who I want to be. But it's just so hard to be positive right now when I have been yelling about this at the top of my lungs for months. And people just have refused to listen. Like, oh, everything will be fine in the fall when football comes. Yeah, right. Dude, I think I said that back in like April, Ralph. I was like, dude, everybody thinks football is going to be okay. We're iffy right now. We're already iffy on baseball. And even the NFL is going to get iffy real soon because they actually have some issues on the horizon that people don't even realize about.
I just want to know. So you are unequivocally laying the blame at the feet of the people who didn't take it seriously, because yes. So I just want to get this straight. So what you're saying is that had everybody rallied together and participated in common sense solutions to slow the spread of this, we would have sports.
Yes, I am. 100% in that boat.
So it's not some uniquely American thing that this virus is still crushing us while a bunch of other countries like Japan and South Korea and Germany and Denmark are all seemingly past it.
What did they do different? I mean, that's the clear and obvious thing. Like, you can't say, oh, well, look, they're past it, and you didn't do the exact same thing. If you don't do the exact same thing, you can't expect the exact same results. I mean, it's clear. Like, when you have people who refuse to wear masks out of just courtesy, and you have people who just won't do, you know, like, when people say they don't know, like, so instead of just going along with it and say, all right, look, we don't know, let's just, you know, let's just err on the side of caution. No, they're like, no, this intrudes on my American rights. Yeah, but this is the same like smoking, bro. You can't smoke indoors. You can't smoke in a stadium because it infects other people's health, or potentially can. There's no difference. I don't get why this turned into some like muzzling and whatever. But let's move on to the man, the leader of the Pac-12, Larry Scott.
Yeah,
we have been talking about what's going on with him for a while.
Move on from Larry Scott or move on to Larry Scott?
Yeah, let's move on to moving on from Larry Scott. So conference leadership is potentially putting the squeeze on Larry Scott. The CEOs may be ready to buy him out because of Ralph tweeted out a wonderful, a wonderfully embarrassing infographic from Axios. And what all did it say? It was talking about the amount of providers that are available to different sports. And where was the Pac-12 falling in at?
Well, it doesn't look good. So this Axios article wasn't meant to be specific to the Pac-12. It was just a list of the select sports and streaming options that you have and a list of how much everything costs. So, you know, not every single sports network out there is actually available on every single one of these streaming service options. The five biggest ones as far as streaming are Fubo TV. Do you have that one, George?
Hell no.
Okay, neither do I. Fubo actually offers everything. Everything you could possibly want. They are the only ones who do. Yeah, because they have NFL Network and NFL Red Zone, and YouTube TV, Hulu, Sling, and AT&T TV Now do not have that. And so, and Fubo actually has Pac-12 Network as well as everything else. MLB, NHL, NBA, Big Ten, ACC, SEC, FS1,
FS2. Sounds like they got something going.
Yeah, Fubo might be the move, to be honest, because YouTube TV just went from $39.99 a month to $64.99 a month, making it the second most expensive behind Fubo, one penny behind Fubo. But they don't have NFL Network. They don't have NFL Red Zone. They don't have NHL Network. And guess what? YouTube TV does not have Pac-12 Network. And you'd figure if they're going to up their prices 30% out of nowhere, not that Google needs the money, but if YouTube TV is going to up their prices 30% out of nowhere, then maybe they could afford to get Pac-12 Network on YouTube TV, and maybe I would keep it because I just canceled my YouTube TV, and I think you said you were in the same boat, right?
Yep. I canceled YouTube TV because they lost the Fox regional channels too, and so I had Hulu TV and YouTube TV and a side of Sling, but Sling gone. They lost NFL Network and NFL Red Zone at least, and the Pac-12 gone. I had no reason to have you, buddy. And YouTube TV, it was my backup for Hulu. But now that you've increased your price, like you've priced me out, like I used to be able to just be like, it's $39.99. We use it some. It's cool. No problem. Now, nope, gotta go.
And Hulu does not have NBA TV, MLB Network, NHL Network, or NFL Red Zone or NFL Network, and again, no Pac-12 Network either, and they're at $54.99 a month. Sling has upped their prices yet again. They're now at $45 a month. They do have Pac-12 Network, but guess what, George? It's not included in the base price.
So we get an upcharge for it? How much is the upcharge for it?
From what I remember, the sports add-on package is between $10 and $15.
So it's like a bundle though.
Yeah, and then and also in order to record those things, because that's how I watched all the Pac-12 games last year, is I had Sling TV plus the sports add-on plus the DVR add-on so that I could go back and rewatch all the games before we record it. So I was spending $60 a month, I believe, for my Sling subscription by the time I ended up taking everything off because there's no sports right now. But yeah, so Sling is continuing to get more and more expensive. And then AT&T TV Now, which I did not even know was an option. I'm a T-Mobile guy. But AT&T TV Now has everything but NFL Network, NFL Red Zone, FS2, and Pac-12 Network. The only things you get with AT&T TV Now, which is $55 a month as a base price, is FS1 and ESPN. That's it. Everything else that for them is an add-on. So we are basically at the point where streaming was supposed to be a better option than cable, but it's now all pretty much the same price as cable.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing better about it is that you have the convenience of being able to, you know, of being able to take it with you wherever you go. Like it's easier. I found it at least easier to be able to like take it with me when I travel. I just pack I can either watch it on my phone, pack my Apple TV or whatever. And I always have access to all these things. And I can even share from my phone to the Apple TV so it makes a very convenient thing. Streaming does. And some of the cable providers haven't quite gotten it that streamlined yet.
So, I mean, but just this infographic alone, and it was part of an article that said an overview of the sports streaming landscape. And there's not really a lot of extra information in that back on July 5th on Axios.com. But just the infographic alone of the Pac-12 network being the least available of all of the college sports networks. In fact, the only place that any other college sports network is not accessible, and this is incredibly frustrating. So the Pac-12 is not available on 3 of the 5 major sports streaming options. All of the other conference networks combined only have one unavailability. And that's that there's no Big Ten network on Sling. Everything else is available everywhere else.
Yeah.
How embarrassing is that? So the Pac-12 is not available on 3 streaming services, and then the Big Ten, ACC, and SEC combined only have one unavailability, and that's Sling for the Big Ten network.
What have I always said that the Pac-12's problem is? They suffer from they don't have the most important ability in life, which is availability. You can't raise your brand if you're not available for people to see. We've seen how popular, you know, like how influential that just being famous and being available is. Look at the Kardashians. They've built brands on being able to stay relevant. They can't sing. They can't dance. They can entertain you because they found a way to stay relevant with their shows, with their social media, just staying relevant. Like they don't have any just natural talent. I mean, there's a lot of people that are like that. I mean, it's not like being a comedian. It's not like being a writer, you know, like something that it takes so long to dedicate this craft. And yes, being popular and being relevant is a skill. It is a skill. Like that, I don't want to take away or trying to like besmirch them at all, but it's not like some God-given talent that you know that some people cannot have. You know what I mean? I feel like the pool of people who could be Kim Kardashian, of pretty girls who could be Kim Kardashian with the right molding and the right backing behind them, is longer than the people who could be Beyonce.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
All right. Next thing up, we got. Actually, hold up. We didn't even finish. So Larry Scott, do you think he's going to get bought out or not?
I don't think that there is any advantage whatsoever to the Pac-12 having Larry Scott in any position of influence within its ranks whatsoever. That being said, what has changed? Nothing has changed. It's still the same people that have allowed Larry Scott to dig the Pac-12 into this hole in the first place. All I have ever seen Larry Scott do is survive. He's getting away with paying $8 million in rent and not paying the loan back that he got for his house, several years down the line in the middle of a massive global financial COVID-19 related crisis. The Pac-12 is still out there paying $8 million in rent or whatever. So the fact that all of these things are plainly within view for anybody of influence of any kind, and the fact that the tables haven't turned yet, I don't see what would make them do it. You know, I don't see that. As much as, you know, these stories keep getting put out here and there, you know, I haven't seen anyone go public in a position of leadership to say we need a change. And until I see that, I'm completely convinced that he's going to be the Pac-12 commissioner for eternity.
Dude, don't lose faith, man. Don't lose faith because, I mean, like, it's got to stop somewhere, right?
Yeah. I mean, will they keep him on after they cancel sports completely? Will they just keep paying him in retainer? There's no more sports because nobody will get with these guidelines on how we can slow the spread. So sports are gone forever, but somehow we'll still have Larry Scott. That's the way that I'm looking at it, is he's not going anywhere. Nothing's ever going to change, because if it hasn't changed by now, what was the tipping point? Everything is the same as it was last year and the year before that. And the year before that, the Pac-12's trajectory has been painfully obvious. It has been right out there for absolutely everyone to see. And I mean, when you have people who barely follow this conference, who laugh when they hear some of the things that this conference has done, and, you know, every single time that reignites all of this huge fan base for the Pac-12 that has been saying, get rid of him this entire time. You know, I don't know a single sensible person that isn't on the receiving end of the conference money that gets handed out that thinks that he should be in that job. So what that should tell you is I know a couple of administrators of different colleges who aren't coming out and saying it because they get paid. Other than that, it's a unanimous, absolutely unanimous. And if it's unanimous and nothing's changed so far, I don't think anything's going to change.
Ooh. See, like, the pandemic has put him in a position. It's put him in a weird spot, right? Because he could say, all right, look, I understand we're in a pandemic. My contract is up next year. A couple years, we got the negotiations rights. I want to be a part of that. I'll lower my salary to $3 million. I will do everybody a solid because it's going to cost you more to buy me out. And, you know, like, we don't need to do this. Like, we don't need to change leadership. It's going to cost more money. Let's do the economically sensible thing. I'll take a huge pay cut. But then after we renegotiate, my salary goes back up, right? That's what he's gonna do.
So he'll make sure he's taken care of on the back end.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So did you see? He's giving back like what, 12% of his salary or something like that?
Yeah. It probably should be 20 because the highest the conference is giving up, people in the conference, is 20%. The majority are at 12. Some schools are at 10 and 5, like Colorado's, whose salaries aren't super high. But like, come on, bro. Like you're making, like you've been getting over for a pretty long time. Like, oh yeah, yeah, no, I'm going to be commensurate with everyone else. It's 12%. So I think that's fair. No, man, well, maybe, you make more than everybody else. Like
it, maybe top, that extra, top down. Maybe that extra 8% can go to paying back his home loan. Maybe.
Maybe that actually might be the sensible thing to do. So I will put that Axios graph that we talked about earlier in the show notes so you guys can check that out. But yeah, Larry Scott's a joke, and he's put the conference in such a bad position, a bad, bad position. But with that said, some teams are still in a good position as it relates to recruiting. And Ralph found a tweet from Sports Pac-12 about recruiting. And if anybody follows recruiting very closely, you would look at, you know, the top teams right now in the Pac-12 are, you have Oregon's ranked fifth or sixth, depending on which recruiting site or whatever, in the team rankings. USC is right behind them. And then you have Washington creeping in. I think they're, what, like 33 right now or something like that? So, and beyond there, the Pac-12 is kind of fledgling. Well, actually, well, Washington came up to 28 in 24/7. And then it is a while till you get to UCLA in the 40s, Cal around 50. You have to get to number 50, Ralph, to get five Pac-12 teams. I think that's a problem, right? I mean, I get that it's only July and it's a pandemic, haven't had on-campus visits and all of that, but people are recruiting. So I think that this is a problem, right?
I'm not sure yet. I need to see how things shake out. You know, last year, I think they're actually, as far as the rankings, they're better now than they were at any point last year, I think. So, I mean, that's a little bit encouraging. But the tweet that I found from Sports Pac-12, and found by, you know, scrolling with my thumb on my own feed, which, P.S., I follow these guys. They should follow me back. They don't. But I'm not going to hold that against them because they're a good follow at Sports Pac-12. And also, I'm not a good follow. So maybe they're smarter than the other people who do follow me. In fact, everybody should just mass unfollow my account. Everybody go and follow the Pac-12 Apostles Twitter instead of me. That would be a really good idea, because then you won't have to deal with all of my garbage. And then the relevant stuff, I'll just retweet from the Pac-12 Apostles Twitter. Let's see if we can get those follows up. But this Twitter account, Sports Pac-12, says 2021 Pac-12 football commits in the Rivals Top 100. And I work with Rivals. And so this is something that I was really unaware of, that it was, you know, broken down this way, and I liked it. It listed the 11 players from Rivals' current iteration of the top 100 that are committed to Pac-12 schools. First of all, I didn't know that there was a total of 11, and I think that's actually probably pretty good for where we're at right now in the recruiting cycle, even though there are a lot more players committed than usual. The top 100 players don't necessarily have that incentive on them to commit early because, you know, the schools are going to take them regardless of how long they wait. But only three teams in the Pac-12 currently have a verbal commitment from a top 100 player, according to Rivals. And the team that has the highest ranked player is University of Washington. The young Heward, who is committed to University of Washington, is currently the top player in the Rivals 100 who's committed to a Pac-12 school. And then everybody after that, the other 10 are split between University of Oregon and USC. Oregon has 6, I believe, and USC has 4. And so, yeah, I first of all, I thought it was interesting that only 3 Pac-12 schools have a commitment from a top 100 player, but I was encouraged that there are 11 current commitments, And then I found it very interesting that most of them are to two schools, USC and University of Oregon, which if you're a fan of any other team in the Pac-12, that has got to make you feel sick to your stomach, because there looked to be a light at the end of the tunnel in the last couple of years, that it felt like, you know, people could wrestle the control of the South away from USC and the North away from Oregon long term, not just having one or two down years at a time. But here we are in 2020, and Oregon's really only had one good year in the last three. And it's arguable that USC hasn't really had a good year, according to their own program standards, in quite a while. And they're the ones that are cleaning up and recruiting. And that just goes to show you that sometimes it's really about making sure that you have people who can just get out of the way and let the brand recognition do its thing.
Yeah. And when you look at last year, you had Oregon State, Washington State, and Arizona were the only Pac-12 schools that did not sign at least one four-star recruit. Cal had one. USC only had two, which was like, wow. Colorado, three. UCLA, three. Arizona State, eight. Utah, four. Stanford, eight. And Washington had 10 when you consider their 1 5-star, and Oregon had 10 when you consider their 3 5-stars. And when you go to 2021 right now, the Pac-12, you only have at this point in time with commits, with 4-star or better commits. Oregon has 11, USC has 11, Washington has 2, UCLA has 1, Cal has 5, which is a testament to what Justin Wilcox is doing around that program, and Utah has 1, and that's it. I think that that is kind of the more telling thing. I think that Stanford is going to come up quickly, because we've seen a couple kids put out tweets like, yo, I got accepted to Stanford. Like, you have to get accepted to Stanford before you can commit, which is crazy. So, yeah, so I don't know how to feel about this recruiting. I think that it's great for conferences to be strong at the top, with Oregon, USC, and Washington especially. Cal is coming on strong. I think it's important for Arizona State and UCLA, if nobody else shows up in recruiting, that those two teams, and then aside of Stanford as well, that those teams have to show up big time in recruiting. And you can't just have you can't have a two teams with a top 10 class, Washington in the top 25, and then not have anybody until the late 30s or 40s. If you want to be competitive, like, you need to have your best 5 or 6 teams in the top 30, period. And then a couple of them, and then at least 3 of them in the top 15, if you really want to be competing for national championships.
That's one of the reasons that I really enjoy working with you, George, is I don't have to explain to you, and you don't have to explain to me, that talent is destiny, right? That getting good players is it just increases your ability to not be the reason that your team loses, right? It's a lot harder to screw things up when you have an entire team full of 4 and 5-star recruits, which is why guys like Willie Taggart didn't get to hang on to the reins out there at Florida State, because with the amount of talent that they had out there, you run out of excuses. Most of the teams that are playing for a national championship year in and year out, you can trace 3, 4, and 5 years back, they're almost always in the top 10. Even more so often in the top 5 in the way that their recruiting rankings shake out. And so if the Pac-12 wants to be competitive, obviously, then they need to be able to get better players. They need to be able to keep players home. I don't think that this particular graphic about just the top 100 is necessarily as reflective, because you really build your roster out with those higher end 3-star guys and then the occasional 4-star that you can get if you're most of these Pac-12 programs. But just the idea that it's just really coming down to USC and Oregon again is the thing that stands out to me the most, especially because the immediate track record, the immediate track record is okay. You know, whether it's the excitement of Keaton Slovis or what University of Oregon was able to do last year. But even the 2-year window shows that, like, hey, these aren't necessarily perennial contenders, right? And so for them to be back up on top in recruiting, you really have to look at the staff that's in place and figure, you know, how are they doing it this way? Why are they doing it this way? Who's involved? And obviously USC made some of the right decisions with bringing in the people that they brought in. And obviously Oregon continues to do things in a way that's incredibly effective. The teams that I think should be concerned by this are, you know, you had teams with momentum like Cal and Colorado, and the next step is to start landing some of these top 100 players, right? And Washington, while they do have the top player on this list, they do need to make sure that they're in there doing that as well. And then with Arizona State, you know, that they had a lot of momentum last year and they have not necessarily been able to have that translate over. You and I have talked about in previous shows why that's potentially the case, but then there's some schools that really don't have an excuse for what's going on right now. And I'd put University of Arizona in that category. And UCLA as well, you know, but obviously they're taking Chip Kelly's approach to recruiting to the nth degree of, you know, making sure that like kids have sleep studies and are measured by 3 different doctors before they can garner an offer from the Bruins. So, you know, that makes it a little bit more complicated on their end, but we'll see if that works out long term. But in the meantime, if you don't see your name amidst this list of contending for top 100 players, then you're probably not going to contend for the conference. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah. And, but there will be people who tell you, Ralph, it doesn't matter. Like, you can develop 3 stars. Yes, you can. But they, like, these recruiting sites, whether it's Rivals or 24/7, whatever recruiting service is your pleasure. There is a hit rate on 5 stars and very high 4 stars. Like, you are more likely to get an NFL player out of a 4- and 5-star player than you are out of 3-star players. That does not mean that your 3-star players, that individually they cannot be successful and go on to high heights and do wonderful things. However, it's almost like when you start on, you know, third base athletically, you have a better chance of being a professional athlete. If you start off, if you walk into college 6'5", 250, running a 4.5 with a 40-inch vertical and can catch a BB in a sandstorm, the chances of you going to the NFL are probably pretty high. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, or if you show up to college 6'1", 180 pounds, and you're trying to play 160 pounds, you're trying to play safety, and you run a 4.8. You know, it's different. It's just different.
And I will say that I feel like Utah was probably the best coach team in the conference last year, which, by the way, did you see that our guy? Our guy? He's in the Pac-12. So, Morgan Scalley is going to hold on to his job out there in Salt Lake City. They've essentially announced that he's not going to be the coach in waiting anymore. Which I found to be interesting. But he's been reinstated And so, I'm sure that you have something to say about that. But I will say, I feel like Utah was the best coach team in the conference last year, and they had a lot of senior talent, some of those three stars that they had developed up over time. And look what happened when they played against USC and Oregon. That's ultimately what it comes down to is, can you imagine what Utah could do if they were recruiting at the same level as USC or Oregon? Because, you know, even when you have guys out there like Bradley and I and Leckie Fotu on your defense, when you bring Panay Sewell in, it doesn't matter that he's a sophomore and you're in your fifth year. It doesn't matter the amount of development that went into it. Panay Sewell is quite possibly one of the best offensive linemen of my lifetime.
Correct. To ever play in the Pac-12.
Yeah. And I mean, I had doubts about him in high school because I've been out to St. George and I see the level of competition he was playing against, but obviously he'd come into these camp settings and show that he was completely dominant. And so, you know, he was deserving of the ranking that he had going into University of Oregon. And then he's just continued to prove that, you know, you really see the difference that talent makes when you also get it into a situation where it's against people who are essentially overachieving, right? According to their talent, what it comes down to is, if you can harness that talent, people always say that hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard, but guess what? Some talent works hard and there's no beating it. And so
you're right about that.
You know, if Utah wants to continue the trajectory that they've been on, they want to take this conference over, they're going to have to recruit at the level that USC and Oregon are doing it right now. And with the coaching staff that they have in place, with Morgan Scalley getting reinstated and with Kyle Whittingham's track record, then they might have the conference wrapped up for 10 straight years. But if they can't get players to Salt Lake, doesn't matter.
Yeah, the getting better talent decreases the greatness that you need to coach to win. I mean, it's simple math. Like, if you have five LeBron Jameses or five NBA All-Stars versus, you know, the New York Knicks, who's probably going to win? I mean, like, I could coach them. I could, hey, just go out there. Just don't screw it up. Okay. Okay. Bye. You know what I mean?
So on the Morgan Scalley thing, he had gotten a raise from $525,000 a year to $1.1 million annually. They rescinded that raise. So essentially this scandal, and the scandal that we're referring to, if you've been living under a rock, is Morgan Scalley on, I guess, multiple occasions has used the N-word in the presence of black players, and that's no good. But you and I had talked extensively on this podcast about what we think should happen. We never said he should be fired. You know, we said the players should probably have a voice in it or whatever. But it looks like, so he's been reinstated, and his salary is going from $1.1 million back down to $525,000 where it was. So it's costing him more than half of what his salary would have been heading into this year. And they said that they had made a verbal offer to him to be Utah's coach in waiting to keep him around, sort of like the Jimmy Lake situation at University of Washington. And they have rescinded that as well. I'm not sure what that means. I'm sure maybe he'd still get the opportunity to interview or something. Mm-mm. You don't think so?
No.
Okay. No,
in 5 or 10 years, maybe, but he's got to be toast for it. He's toast for a while though.
But there's a cost. I mean, there's quite a cost here. I mean, more than half of his salary, $575,000, gone out the window, and the expectation that he was going to be able to step in and be head coach of this program is also gone. You know, which is interesting that they would have that in place anyway, with the NFL holding on to the Rooney Rule but still struggling with its effectiveness and everything like that. The idea that Utah wouldn't wouldn't interview was probably something that they needed to remove from the situation. So, you know, the if this becomes open or Kyle Whittingham ever goes, you know, I know there's BYU fans and USC fans who have all wondered about, you know, what his future in Salt Lake and if he'd ever jump ship, you know, there that's going to need to be an open interview process, I'm sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. There's no just... Okay. He's our head coach. And wait, really? Are you sure about that? Are you sure that's what you want to do? Yeah, I figured that would be the result of it. On to Ralph. Probably, I think your new favorite segment, part of the Pac-12 Apostles is the ratings, discussing our ratings. And how this all started was, How did the ratings discussion start?
I feel like you were telling people to leave a 5-star review and I just like meekly piped up in the background or 4 stars and that upset you. And that led to people leaving us 4-star reviews. But we did get some just honest reviews, you know, letting us know that the specific people thought that we were not doing a good job. And that seems to have ceased as our talking about Morgan Scally has died down. So maybe our one star review has been removed after being updated week to week. It has now been removed, which is nice. So thank you for
so was he shamed or was he like, hold up, they're not really jerks like I thought they were, so let me back off.
And you're talking about our guy Gorilla Bears, and he's an avid listener, and so he just didn't like what. And I think he also went into it with the understanding that, like we were saying, that Morgan Scally should be fired, and we never went down that road. But we did. We definitely talked about it for a really long time, and you know that probably wasn't a comfortable subject for any Utah fans who do listen to the show. So, you know, he updated his 1-star review to say something else the next week, which then we challenged him to just continue to update his 1-star review and that we would read it every week. And now his 1-star review is gone completely, but he still gets a shout out on the show. Gorilla Bears, we love you. But this week, since our last show, it's been 2 weeks. But I did find it interesting. We have 3 5-star reviews, no 4-star reviews, George.
No 4-star reviews?
No 4-star reviews.
That's what I like to see.
Well, I also enjoy a good 5-star review, but I would rather have I'd rather have a lot more information to sort through. So I would rather have 10 4-star reviews. And then if every single one of those people leaving a 4-star review actually left an honest critique that could help us get better, then it would be like we're receiving coaching. And then down the line, we'd never have to worry about getting any 4-star reviews ever because we made the necessary adjustments and we'd be out there getting that Pat Mahomes money. So I want to see 10 4-star reviews. And if there's going to be some 5-stars in there, that's fine too. But I want to see 10 4-star reviews by the next time we get back together to do a show. And I got the ball rolling. I just left us a 4-star review, George.
What? You're going to make my head explode, Ralph. How? Why would you do that? Because you can still have room for improvement and get 5 stars because people can believe that this is a 5-star podcast and still at the same time say, "Ooh, it'd be nice to do this." No, give me the 5 stars and give me the criticism because it means that you like it.
All right. Well, I will say,
how could you give us a 4-star review, dude? You're like self-deprecating, way too self-deprecating.
No, man, this is on you. I got my 2.5 stars out of it. You get 1.5 stars this week because our listeners aren't going to know this because our podcast is heavily edited for flow. But you just forgot to mute your mic when your dad walked in. So you get the 1.5 stars. I get 2.5, and that adds up to 4. And I will change since we don't have Gorilla Bears around anymore since he deleted his 1-star review. I'm gonna review our podcast and the effort that we put in every week, and I'll update reminder. So I'll let you know if you earn your 2.5 next week.
Oh man. Well, is it possible some weeks that you pull more weight than others and you're like, oh, George, I think I get 3.5 today and you only get 1.5?
Yeah. I'm not competitive, right? So me not being a competitive person, I should just be honest about the effort that I put into each show. So, I mean, I'll have to be specific when I actually update my review each week, whether or not I felt like I pulled my weight.
Okay. last thing that we have is, so the Ivy League announced, so we talked briefly earlier about the Ivy League announcing about no fall sports and possible exclusive spring sports, and they may or may not have football. The NCAA is on the no plan plan. And Ralph, do you think college football season kicks off? Because, well, actually, first question, do you think it kicks off? Second thing is, I had a dude in my tweets who said, the crazy part is that people like you in the media aren't discussing the impact of not having a season. And most of it, I believe, is driven by your people's political affiliations, and it's sad to see.
Your people. I don't know about that one, man. I'm not touching that.
I mean, haven't we talked about the impact of it? The financial impact, the impact on recruits, the impact on their families. This is devastating, and how upset emotionally that I am going to be about this if it happens. So I tweeted at him back. I was like, hey, bro, I this is pure lunacy here. And the second thing is, what do you assume my political affiliations are, and why do you think that they would have anything to do with this? Like, I just despise that this has become a political issue.
Absolutely.
I believe it's a public health issue.
Well, here, I got an email from a guy. He signed it Santa Barbara Larry, and I think it's a good email. And my answer to your question is I don't. At this point today, I'm not confident there's going to be football. But he said, hey, Ralph, really enjoy the Pac-12 apostles with you and George. Have a bone to pick with you guys. One of you said the fatality rate for college football players from COVID-19 will be 1% if they play this year. My best estimate right now is 0.032%. So your estimate is more than 30 times too high. But more importantly, you must ask yourselves, will college football players be safer by playing football or not playing? I think the evidence is clear. A college football player in a major conference will be far safer from COVID-19 playing football. Think about it. If they play, their daily activities will be highly regulated. They'll have significantly more testing and more immediate support services than if they do not play. So keep our Pac-12 players healthy by playing some football. Regards, Santa Barbara Larry. So me right now, where I'm at, I do not think that the season is going to kick off on time, if at all. I'm not very optimistic at this point in time. But when I just am looking at this individual email from our guy, Santa Barbara Larry, thank you for listening to the show, by the way, Larry. I don't feel differently. I knew that when we were discussing the potential, whether or not somebody could die from COVID, and we talked about it earlier in this show, that for me, one is too many if it's preventable. But I understand that we got some feedback on what our percentages were. But you have to understand where our heart's at. And we're just trying to be cautious and make sure that lives aren't unnecessarily interrupted or devastated due to this virus. We care about these kids. But the idea that they would be safer playing football than they are not playing football, I'm not sure I disagree with that. I think that that's probably right on, but that's just not the only thing that's factored into making this decision.
Yeah. And yes, they'll be tested and all that stuff all the time. But like we have seen a couple of college administrators come out and say, they're like, well, we have put all these protocols in place, and then we go out and see them out eating at a restaurant out in the city. So it puts everybody in a precarious position, and I know that everybody is tired of dealing with this. And that's where I am, dude. It's just so deflating because my son is going into high school. We were faced with a choice this year because he's a high-level athlete. And as you know, Ralph, there are a number of people who choose to go the route of holding their kids back. And if anybody doesn't know that this is a huge trend in sports, that they will either hold their kids back in sixth grade, eighth grade, or both. Or sometimes they'll double hold back eighth grade. So they'll complete their eighth grade year. Then they'll basically have a gap year where they're still taking ninth grade classes or repeating their eighth grade classes or a combination of both, and then go to high school the next year. That's why you get like, you know, JT Daniels, where they're like, oh, he should have still been in college. No, I mean, in high school. No, he shouldn't have. He was a holdback. So he was supposed to graduate. He just reclassified. You know, you have other kids, you know, Jimmy Clausen was damn near 20 years old in high school.
Yeah. All my kids are 1 year young for their grade, and it was the right move for some of them. And I got one that's probably going to take another go because they all age up prior to the or after the school year ends. And so, you know, I got two July kids, an August kid, and a December kid, and they're all, every single one of them is on an early track. And so, you know, I think you do everything individually according to a kid's needs, but more and more, even locally here in Arizona, some of the high schools that I cover, you know, that you've got parents that are being very open about the fact that they are giving their kids multiple opportunities at eighth grade so that they can increase their viability as a collegiate athlete. I know of one long snapper and one linebacker who actually went to a Pac-12 school and has since graduated, who were both eighth grade holdbacks, and it actually worked for them. They got college scholarships out of it that they might not have otherwise. And so, that's definitely happening.
Well, that's the crazy, like, I kind of frown upon it because for most of the kids, especially the ones who are physically gifted and, you know, big, tall, fast, strong already, I'm like, what did you do it for? Like, that way you can't compete against younger people? You're supposed to be better, right?
Yeah, I think the whole idea of like varsity football, that, I mean, and the same with college, if you're ready to play as a freshman, then you play. Right. But when you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars and not being a wage slave to crushing collegiate related debt over the course of your life, having to do eighth grade twice isn't that much of a penalty for some of these parents to make their kids pay. You know, my kids aren't necessarily involved in athletics to no organized athletics up to this point. You know, I have my two oldest kids. I got two Irish twins. They're both 11 years old right now. Haven't really shown a ton of interest in doing those things. And so, you know, would I make a decision like that based on athletics for them? No, because it hasn't even really been part of their life. But you know, when you have a kid who's playing, and you go to the doctor and the doctor says like, hey, this is their expected height and weight. By the time they're 18, it could change by the time they're 19. And you've got $100,000 in tuition, room and board on the line. What do you do? And so I'm not saying that I would do that. I'm just saying I haven't been in those shoes and I understand, I think, why it's done.
Yeah, I understand why it's done. But for me, I made the decision to not do it. Because I just felt like he's 6'1", 150 now. He's got rocket arm. He's fast. He's a phenomenal athlete. And granted, holding him back would put him at a tremendous advantage going forward. I mean, like coming in as a freshman, he would have an opportunity to start and potentially in multiple sports. And I was just like, do I want to give him the easy route? Or do I want him to, you know, like figure out where he fits? I mean, because I looked at it like, because a lot of these parents, Like, I know one parent. Her son is like 6'6 right now. He's 6'6. He's going into the ninth grade, but she's holding him back. He's like 6'6, 250 or something like that.
Good Lord.
Like, I'm like, and his brother plays college football at a Power Five university, big time school, a big time school, multiple national championships there, everything like that type of football school. And he's getting held back. I asked his mom, I was like, why? She was like, I don't think he's mature enough. I was like, how mature do you expect him to be at 14? Like, how mature? I'm just curious. Like, what is the purpose? She was like, I want him to get stronger. He's going to get stronger if he's 6'5", 250 right now. Like, what more do you want from the kid?
Yeah, I don't see. And then if I saw my kid was in eighth grade and he had to go line up against somebody who was 6'6", 250 pounds, supposed to be ninth grader, I might have them fake an ankle injury or something so that they're not nursing a real one. It definitely affects. And that's the thing. We've been talking about coronavirus. Your decision that you make for your family does have an effect on the other decisions that other people make for their family. And so, you know, when we have people who are just sort of doing what's best for themselves, there is going to be a consequence that comes out of that. In some way, shape, or form. And if everybody is willing to just deal with whatever those consequences are in order to have the freedoms that we have, cool. But if we lose those freedoms because of those consequences, then, you know, I think someone somewhere needs to take some action and exercise some authority to get everybody back on the same page again. You know, whether that's somebody who's 6'6", 250 pounds, being able to play with people who are 95 pounds or, you know, whether that's, you know, what we're going to do as far as keeping our kids safe and having fall sports and protecting them and their families from disease. You always have to consider, you know, yourself and what you're doing, but you have to look at the trees for the forest and the forest for the trees. You have to see the whole picture.
Yeah. I just think that it is very important. Well, so for me, the decision to not hold him back, I was just like, but it made me think, because I didn't, you know, we all, like you said, we want to do the best for our kids. We want to do all of that. And I'm just sitting there just like, okay, he may have to miss this whole entire season. You hear me?
Yeah.
Like, so am I then putting him at a disadvantage? And then I looked at people like Steph Curry and people like, you know, I mean, even Aaron Rodgers or Damian Lillard, who went to Weber State. Steph went to Davidson. Aaron Rodgers went to a JUCO. Like, sometimes you get where you need to be. You know, and I think that sometimes we try to knock down obstacles for our kids, when in reality, sometimes where they needed to be at that point in time was the best place for them. Because had Steph Curry been a bigger recruit and went to Duke, things may not have worked the same. He may not have had a chance, might not have been able to shoot the ball as many times, as recklessly as he had to develop the confidence to be who he is. At same thing with Lillard at Weber State. Same thing with Aaron Rodgers going to a JUCO, that lighting that fire up.
Butte JUCO? Yeah.
Butte. So, like, a lot of times we look for, like we want that 5-star review, if you will. We want that 5-star college. You know what I mean? But sometimes am I going against my own agenda right now? but sometimes we need that 3-star lifestyle to motivate us to something else. That's the way I look at it. That's why I decided not to do it.
Well, I'm sure that other people will have plenty to say about the decisions that you have made for your personal life, because that's how we function as a society.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for listening to the Pac-12 Apostles. We appreciate your time, appreciate your energy. Thank you for sharing the podcast. And of course, leave a 5-star rating if you agree with me. If you agree with Ralph and are wrong, leave something else. send us an email to imad@unafraidshow.com. Hit him up on Twitter at Ralph Amsden, me at George Reister, the podcast at Pac-12 Apostles. We appreciate all your input, or you can send us a voicemail on the Anchor app. Yeah, peace out. See you guys next show.